Before we get started, I can't be more happy to announce that we've made it to our 10th episode. Thank you to everyone who has taken the time out of their day to listen to this podcast. If you haven't had the chance, consider rating us on Apple Podcasts and leaving us a review with what you enjoy and what you'd like to hear more about in future episodes. Now on to our 10th. You're listening to the Production Specialist Podcast, a podcast series of personal accounts from individuals and companies in emerging and frontier production industries. I'm Lorenzo, and I'll be your host. Who doesn't like the movies? The smell of fresh popcorn. Soda that is just way too big for an individual. Amazing sound that rumbles your body. And the best visuals that modern technology has to offer. Going to the movie theater has always been one of my favorite pastimes. The movies is somewhere I can just relax and enjoy a long-awaited film. Being a member of the filmmaking process, I know how difficult it can be to start and finish a project, especially big productions, which average around 871 days from announcement to release, and budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars. To make the best of this, studios usually hold test screenings with a private audience to gauge the general reaction before its actual release. Maybe you've walked out of a theater and stumbled upon a person holding a notepad.
Hey, would you be willing to come watch our movie for free?
Yeah, they're probably inviting you to a test screening. At this point, the film is most likely in its rough cut stage, with key elements missing, such as the original score. However, there is a score that has been created by the music editor, through splicing and cutting pre-existing music into a temporary score. Other than the temp score, the music editor wears many hats. On our 10th episode, we host Eric Reasoner, an ex-music editor and a current professor at Berklee College of Music in Boston. Before becoming a professor, he worked on some major films, such as Lethal Weapon 3 and 4, and Die Hard with a Vengeance. Welcome to the show, Eric.
I came to Berklee College of Music as a student many years ago and got my degree in film scoring. Berklee was one of the first, actually the first, I guess, undergraduate program of its type to offer film scoring as a degree, as an actual program. And so I majored in it, graduated with my degree in film scoring. And while here, got to know the founding chair, Don Wilkins, and assistant chair, Michael Rendish, pretty well. And I started to work with Don on as his music editor. You know, he took music editing classes along with the film scoring courses here at Berklee. And then right after graduation, I worked with Don on a feature he was doing as he was composer. And so I worked as his music editor on that. So that was my first sort of foray into music editing. And then he and Michael Rendish were co-composers on some PBS documentary series and different kinds of films like that, and they hired me as a music editor, and also I did some orchestration for them. So that's how I got my start. And in that process, our department here at Berklee growing kind of exponentially with that program, they invited me to come back and start doing some teaching. So I started working at Berklee and teaching at that time, as well as doing these projects on the outside with those two. And then eventually, after about 6 years or so of that, I moved to the West Coast and got my experience out there. As I joke with my students, the in the trenches experience and where I lost all the hair on my head from the crazy post-production schedules. But I got a job out there as music editor at a company called Segway Music, which was the largest music supervision and music editorial company in LA at the time. We had a staff of around 25 editors and supervisors, and we primarily did feature films, some primetime television. So that's where I got my initial experience, and some of my former classmates, Berklee alums, were already out there. And Christopher Brooks is one of the friend of mine, basically, when we were in school, and he was out there, and he kind of helped to get me in there at Segway, and also then introduced me to the Michael Kamen team. So I worked on several Michael Kamen films with Chris. Chris was kind of the lead music editor on those projects, and I was a music editor along with him. because the amount of work to be done, and basically work in LA for 4 years or so, and then move back to the East Coast, where I did some long distance work as a music editor and some smaller projects around here, and then move back into teaching at Berkeley.
With tough deadlines and long hours, it can take a toll on an individual. We'll get to Eric's role as a teacher at Berkeley soon. Let's find out more about the music editing process.
The job or the task can vary depending on the composer that you're working with or the project that you're working on. In feature film work, there's a process called temp tracking or temp music. When the film is in post-production, before it's actually released, several producers and film studios like to show the film to a test audience. It's called an audience preview. And when you show a film as a work in progress to a test audience, you want to have it try and be as polished as possible. And since many times the composer hasn't yet started on the project, they'll hire a music editor. And so one of our main jobs in that regard is to meet with the director, the filmmaker, the picture editors, and discuss music needs, just as a composer would, but to try and find existing music, pre-recorded music of whatever type that's appropriate for that film, to spot the film, to look at where do we want music, what kind of music should it be, what should it say dramatically, and then to try and find music that fits those parameters, and then to play those ideas for the director to get their approval. You usually come up with several options for every cue that you've spotted. And then once they hopefully, like the music that you've chosen, then you need to edit that music because it was, of course, designed for something else and its form doesn't match the scene that you're trying to put it up against. So you need to physically edit the piece so that it follows the contour and the dramatic arc of the scene at hand. And so that's one of the big jobs of a music editor, starting off in post-production, is to place and edit temp music for these test screenings, while then the composer may be joining the project at some point during that or just after that. And then your role could change to be sort of an assistant to the composer, also a liaison between the composer and music team and the film team. So typically you're hired by the studio, the film company, yet you work, alongside or for the composer as well. So it's kind of like you have, a foot in each world, the film side of things as well as the music side of things.
Having had Eric as a teacher, I remember working on a class project and wanting to challenge myself by creating a temp score for an old school cartoon. It didn't go well. Finding the right music and being able to edit different tracks together to form a seamless score really wasn't easy and was quite frustrating. Here's how Eric creates his temp score.
And that's the quote fun part, and sometimes not fun. The first thing is to really try and get at the heart of what's the film at hand about, and in a real broad stroke fashion, what musical concept is appropriate for this movie? Is it a period film? Is it a contemporary film? And therefore, what kind of score, musical soundtrack, might be appropriate for this particular film? Should it be an orchestral thing? Should it be a more modern kind of approach or a hybrid mixture kind of score? So that's usually step one, is to try and really put your composer hat on if you're temp tracking, to try and figure out what's the movie about and what's appropriate in a broad sense in terms of musical style. And then through the spotting phase, you're breaking down all the different cues or scenes that are going to have music. And based on that overarching idea of concept, you try and figure out, okay, where can I find music that's of this type, this style? And typically we look at other films that may also have a similar approach, but not necessarily just films, but pre-existing music that would fit the bill in terms of the concept, but also fit the bill for this particular cue at hand. And so knowing what is this scene about and what does the director want the music to say, maybe it's just a simple, I need you to add some tension here. and build that tension, saying something's not quite right. So how can I do that? First of all, with the right concept, the right sound, the musical style, but with a music cue that has that specific pointed focus to it. So it's going through lots of different recordings of pieces and trying to filter through all of that to try and find something that's doing those things, playing that idea, but usually having more than one option for a director and seeing what they like. And then once that's approved, whichever, you know, option or choice that you play for them, then it's carving the music, as we say, to sort of follow the contour of the scene. And that's the true editing challenge, to recut the piece of music so that the buildup leads and hits a certain moment, which the original form of the cue almost never does. So whether it's taking out measures of music or beats, or, you know, extending beats so that the climactic moment comes at the right point in the video, and to try and be as elegant as you can be about that through editing the music. I mean, the goal is to try and create a temporary music score that serves the film's needs and makes an audience member believe that that music was written for the film, which is not easy, but that's the goal.
You may notice that these episodes usually have background music. I use it to give the episodes a bit more character. Okay, hold up. A bit too much character. Sorry about that. So, hopefully you don't notice this, but at more dramatic points, the music serves to enhance the story dramatically as well. After Eric is finished with the temp score, the composer is usually brought on, and the composer can take the temp score as a guide or reference for the music that they need to create. At this point, Eric can become an assistant to the composition, live recording, and mixing process.
If we're now working as a music editor, let's say for or with a composer, so the composer and the composer's team is now working on composing the music, creating the music through whatever methods are necessary, whether it's, you know, today, triggering lots of sample libraries and composing cues in digital audio workstations, and then playing those, as we call them, mock-ups, mock versions of what the music will sound like for the director to get their input and modify things. And then eventually a recording session, which maybe if it's completely MIDI and sample libraries, it's a matter of mixing down those, you know, variety of instruments into a smaller group, mixing it and creating a digital audio file or stems of audio files for each music cue. If there's a live component, meaning live musicians, then we help to prepare things for the live scoring session where the music is recorded along with picture going and making sure that it's all synchronizing properly for what the composer has designed. Following that, whichever method, whether it's live or synths or sample libraries or a hybrid of both, the music is mixed down, and once it becomes digital audio files, then it's handed off to the music editor to then place the music cues into their proper location against the picture. And that's one of the big jobs. Typically Pro Tools is the industry standard of what we use for doing that. So importing the video, creating a brand new session, importing all the music cues for that reel, placing them in their correct location, and making sure that, you know, it synchronizes accurately. And then there's always that little curveball that gets thrown at us as music people, and that's the picture change. So the phone rings and the picture editor says, oh, we recut the chase scene in reel four. And then if the music has already been recorded, it's up to the music editor to, what we say, conform, to adjust, revise, recut the music to match the new version of the picture, but to try and maintain the integrity of what the composer intended, the synchronization points of how the music changed at a certain moment, to try and maintain that as best we can. So that's another, kind of, as I said, curveball that gets thrown at us in post-production if they change the picture. So with that now in mind, we take our Pro Tools sessions for the entire project. If it's a feature film, it's several reels or several Pro Tools sessions. And that's where the sound effects team, the dialogue team and then the music editor brings all of their Pro Tools sessions as a group to the dubbing stage or mixing facility. And those sessions are all synced up to the, you know, the picture, and we're simultaneously playing, you know, hundreds of tracks sometimes, depending on the complexity, and playing all those tracks back to picture and then mixing down all of those tracks to eventually to the final mix that you're used to seeing and hearing in the theater.
Mixing down is simply the process of rendering out a group of tracks into a single track. After the master edit and dubbing has been completed, Eric has one more thing to do. This one is pretty important.
Beyond that, the last thing that a music editor would do is to catalog what music actually ended up in the soundtrack, how long each cue actually ended up in the soundtrack of the film, what was the name of the piece of music, who's the composer, what's their affiliation, performing rights organization, you know, ASCAP, BMI, that sort of thing, who's the publisher and their affiliation. And so for original music underscore that the composer writes, typically the studio has a publishing company and they actually own the publishing rights to the music that the composer has written. And so listing all of that music, but also any other music that appears in the soundtrack, such as source music, music that's playing on a radio or songs that are used, those also need to be listed, and the rights to those need to be secured and cleared. And for that kind of music, what's called sync licenses, synchronization licenses are required. So if you wrote a song and I want to put your song in my film, the first thing is to get the rights to do that, you know, pay a fee, a sync fee, obtain the rights to do so. Also, what's called a master use fee, which is a fee for the actual recording, if it's your recording of your song, to place in the soundtrack. So again, basically a list of all the music that occurs in the soundtrack of the film so that it can then, once it's performed, let's say goes over the airwaves somehow, it's the, you know, the film is played in the theaters, of course, but maybe then it's streamed or it's played over cable or whatnot, then royalties are due. So anyone who has music that's in the soundtrack of the film is due to receive royalties for those pieces of music that they own or they composed if they're the composer. And so that document called a music cue sheet is a list of all the cues in the entire film with all of that data. And that's typically cataloged with, you know, BMI and ASCAP or whoever the PRO is, so that they can accurately, as best they can, track the airplay of that film and the soundtrack and then collect those royalties for their members and distribute those royalties to them. People don't get paid properly and they will find you.
Seems quite important, huh? If you intend to stay on good terms with people. So why leave the industry?
Well, the time period when I left LA was the fires, riots, and earthquakes, sort of like, you know, mayhem and whatnot was going on. And it was, you know, kind of challenging just on a personal note of living in a sort of different place than my family and I were used to living at the time. And then dealing with a lot of those challenges and not having family there and all of that stuff was difficult. And thankfully, in one way, I was working on, you know, some of the biggest films of those years, which was both exciting and frightening at the same time, just because, you know, it's like, wow, this is great. And oh my God, you know, at the same time, as I joked earlier, the post-production schedules can get really crazy in terms of the amount of work, the amount of time, you know, working X number of days or weeks straight, 12 or 16 hour days gets to be challenging as a life schedule. So I used to say that your life schedule is whatever the film schedule is you're currently working on. And if they're really kind of crazy schedules, that can weigh on you personally and such. So moving back to the East Coast, I guess shoveling snow was a little bit more favorable than, you know, grabbing onto the doorways as the world shook and the fires and things were going on. But working long distance wasn't really, even in today's remote world, and you can work remotely in a certain amount of your duties, But when the film is coming to completion, you really kind of have to be there wherever there is. But to be available, to be on the dub stage, to be engaged in the conversations and the work environment, it's more efficient to do that. So, and I've always enjoyed teaching. You know, I loved teaching when I first started doing it, you know, as far back as, you know, marching bands growing up in the Midwest. I was involved with that and other groups and writing arrangements for groups. But then in the classroom and at Berkeley in film scoring, I'm sharing my experiences and being engaged with students and who wanted to learn about it. I love that, you know, interaction. And so I gravitated back to it at Berkeley, and they were happy to have me back, thankfully, to continue on and doing that. And so I've now been back here for, my gosh, over 25 years, still doing it. But thinking about retirement, as I'm a pretty old dog now, you know?
Tenth episode is done. Double digits, here we are. It was an honor to have one of my old teachers on the show. If you're into film scoring or any other music degree, I highly suggest applying to Berkeley. There's a ton of stuff available and great people to learn from. Thanks again, Eric. This podcast is produced out of the studios of Black Dagger Audio. We create some awesome sound design, original music, we can bust out top voiceover, and deliver killer dialogue edits. Check us out at blackdaggeraudio.com. See you on the next episode.